Welcome to JBJS Ortho Corps. Listen as members of the ortho community, residents, surgeons, educators, staff, and patients share their stories about the experiences and people most important in their lives and the lessons they learned along the way. Ortho Corps is an audio archive inspired by StoryCorps and independently organized by the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
So, if you don't mind introducing yourself and telling us where you're from and where you did your training.
Yeah, I'm so Ross Leighton from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. Did my training at Dalhousie University and then did a fellowship with Jim Waddell in St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, and then with Mike Chapman and Tim Bray in Sacramento, California. So then went back to work in Canada again, yeah.
So how did you get interested originally in orthopedic surgery and orthopedic trauma?
Yeah, so surgery was, in those days we did a rotating internship. So during the rotating internship, I did a pediatric rotation on orthopedics and just loved it. I thought it was great. So I originally thought I might do, you know, general practice or do pediatrics. My father's a pediatrician, so I kind of thought, so when I got interested in pediatric orthopedics, I thought there I'm going to do pediatric orthopedics with that, and realized that I liked adult orthopedics better. But that's where I got the first hint of it. It was really very fun, and it was really a good rotation. So
great. Yeah. Were there specific mentors, and you already mentioned a couple, but specific mentors you'd like to talk about who influenced you and how?
Yeah, I'd say the two big ones were probably Reg Yabsley, the chief of our program, and Dave Petrie, who was sort of the vice chief of the program. So they were the two biggest influencers on making you who you were as a resident. And then, of course, you grew a bit more when you went to Jim Waddell's finishing school in St. Michael's. And then I met Mike Chapman and Tim Bray, and that furthered along. So that's where I really got the desire to do trauma, sort of the major thing was from those three guys. But Dave Petrie is a big trauma guy. He started the HLS program in Canada, you know, and started that whole revival of HLS. So orthopedics really ran the show in my hospital for about 20 years. Like, it was hard to get general surgery to get involved in major trauma. So
really?
We were really the resuscitators, and we'd do the resuscitation and hopefully get them down to do an abdomen if they came down, you know. But it was really kind of the reverse of what I saw in Sacramento, whereas the general surgeons ran it and orthopedic surgeons kind of came down to do their thing. So it was kind of interesting. So, and I ended up doing here's a rare animal. So I did intensive care as an intensivist for 10 years after that. So I was an intensivist for 10 years after I first went back to Halifax.
Wow.
So I did trauma and intensive care. So I did that in Sacramento. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so a rare animal.
Yeah. So what lessons has your work life taught you?
Over the long term, yeah. Just listening to the last session, it teaches you to look at yourself a bit more critically. You know, you take a lot for granted, and you're not to, you sort of, as you reach the end of your career and go through, you kind of look at what you're doing introspectively, all the hard work you spent. But I think I always had a thing of taking a bit of time off for myself and the family. It always worked out pretty well. So I think I did that. But we work hard, but it's still, I still enjoy the work. I still enjoy the patients, you know. Administration kind of bores you down occasionally, but the patients are good, and the orthopedic surgery is good. So I think that's still the right field for me, for sure.
Great.
Still like it. Yeah.
What would you say you're proudest of?
Yeah, I think two things. I thought of this because two things I'm very proudest of. Number one, when I went back to Halifax, they had their emergency program was a funeral car picking you up at the side of the road. And so I transferred that over as a trauma director of Nova Scotia to, you know, an ambulance service, helicopter service, the whole thing. So it's really an A1, you know, where it was zero before, you know, nothing. So that's a thing you built that you're proud of. And I think the other thing's probably just the development of the COTS group, you know, to really take randomized trials from, it didn't exist really back in 1993. To the point where now you can't get a global award unless you do a randomized prospective trial, you know. Before it was all cohort studies and retrospective. And so I think we've really transformed the way we all do research by saying this is the new bar. So I think that's a pretty good thing. I didn't do it alone. It's a multi-person thing, but but at least I was enough of a person to initiate it anyway. And then the rest of the gang took off, so it was great. So it's like Roy says about the JBTS, it takes the whole, or JOT, it takes the whole group to make it work, but it really changed the way we think of research in orthopedics. So.
When did you start it? Or
92. Okay. Yeah, 92. So I just gave up. So I ran it for 30 years. I'm like Roy, so 30 years of presidency of the COTS group. And so we're just going to change that over. So succession Great. Planning.
Good. So do you have any regrets?
I think you could take more time off for your family and things like that. And I think there's always a few regrets. I think I was always at what I thought was the important games, the important events, but I think I missed a lot of little things around the way that you could have been there a bit more important. And I think, and probably you could do it. I think it's just mentally you were at work and so you stayed at work, but you probably could take more time off. But I think it's easier now to do that because we have more people. Like when I started in my present hostel, there was 6 of us. Mm. Now there's 16 of us, you know. So getting a day off now, if I want to, is easier now because people are quite willing to trade, you know, whereas the 6 of you, if 2 of you are away, it's really 1 and 4. And then all of a sudden, no one had any room to spare. So if you took some time off, you felt kind of guilty for your partners. I think you feel less guilty now because there's more people around. So I think it's easier to think of that now. It wasn't as easy to think of that. But that's kind of I think you could do it over. I'd rather have more people around, a little more time off, I think would be good for everybody. Yeah.
So if you could go back and talk to a younger version of yourself, what would you say?
Yeah, I think they're doing it right now. I think they, I think the programs are probably a little light on the surgery. You know, that's my opinion. I think they don't quite get as much operative experiences as probably they could. And that may be made up by a fellowship. Maybe you just do a fellowship and that gets you by there. But I think, work hard when you're there. But I think when you take some time off, you really take it off and don't feel shy to say, you know, I'm tired and I got to take a bit of time off to recharge. Because I whenever you take some time off, you sort of wonder if you should, but you come back way better, like just way better. You're better for your patients, better attitude in the OR, better attitude for your people around you. You're just way better off. So I think like a little bit of recharging time on a regular basis would be what I'd advise him or her. Yeah.
So how has your life been different than you imagined it would?
I think work-wise, I don't think it's any real different. I think it sort of went in the sequence that I thought it would go. I would say when I started out, I thought trauma was a young man's disease pattern that you know, once you get past 50 or 55, that you probably should give it up because the nights would be too long. But I think that's changed because you can do most of our trauma done during the day now. So that's why I've been able to keep it up. I think if you had it as it was when the old, so I think that surprised me that I could still do trauma as an older surgeon, you know, whereas before I thought you'd have to give it up. And so that's been a change. So I've been able to maintain my trauma and arthroplasty practice really right up to the present day, which is good. I thought I would switch over and just do arthroplasty, you know, come 50 or 55. And I think this has allowed me to do that, which I think has been great because it's much more fun to do trauma. I think, you know.
Obviously, I agree.
Yeah, so.
Are there any funny stories or characters from your career that you'd like to share?
Well, one of the funniest stories, I think, is when I was a training in Sacramento and I went up to Harborview. It's really kind of funny because so I have to look around Harborview for a couple of weeks. I was just an observer and just looking around. And anyway, a VIP surgeon arrived in to get his feet done. And so I said, well, that's kind of interesting. So he had 2 bunions to get done or something like that. But the guys doing it were Ted Hansen was doing one. Emil Turnell came in to do the other one. And Keith Mayo was the assistant at the time. So I remember just looking there thinking, if I had a camera, I'd take a picture. But I didn't have a camera. We had no phones in those days. So I didn't have, but it was really kind of a unique experience watching them all work on this guy's toes and everyone bantering back and forth. Of course, he had a spinal, so he was putting his 2 cents in.
Oh my
God. So the whole thing was kind of funny. It was really a character show of who's who in orthopedics, particularly foot orthopedics for sure. Foot and ankle wasn't a big thing back then, but Emil liked foot and ankle, and Ted Hansen liked foot and ankle, and Keith Mayo was just stuck there. He had to stay, so. But it was kind of a funny story.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Is there a specific orthopedic trauma device, technique, procedure, or innovation that you have a certain connection with that you'd like to share?
I think two things. I think early on was reaming. It was really the reamers were bad, and so I did a lot of basic science work looking at reamers and reamers design and pressure. And I think right now we've got the advantage of that because we have low pressure, low temperature reamers. No one worries about it anymore. We used to have to vent the femurs and have all sorts of videos that show these things hitting the wall, and you know, like there's so much pressure. So, So I think it really did change the way we do that. And we designed, you know, a different type of reamers instead of the big tubes, small tubes. And so that really went a long way. And a lot of basic science in that we really changed what was going on. I think the second one was probably the tibia plateau paper with the calcium phosphate. I said the calcium phosphate is kind of secondary, but what it did do after 2004, 2005, very few of us go to the ILAC crest for a void. You know, you get calcium phosphate or a DVM or bone graft or whatever, because we showed that you don't need an ILAC crest. That's really what that study showed. So in a, you know, metaphyseal contained defect, you don't need to have ILAC crest bone graft. And so we don't go there. I used to go there 3 times a week, right? No. And now you might go there. I think I've been there twice in the last year, you know, just to get ILAC crest bone graft. So really changed what people did. And I remember doing a survey when I was giving a talk about 2008, and the number of hands that go up who had taken an ILAC crest bone graft in the last 6 months was almost zero, you know. Where if I'd done that same survey in 2000, it would have been everyone in the room would have put their hand up. So that really changed the way people behave. So interesting. So that was really a fun thing to do.
Yeah. And the patients appreciate it.
Absolutely, yeah. And they go home because they can go home after something like that. But the ILAC crest, you know, they were sore, right? So they didn't want to go home that much. So it really changed a lot of patient procedures from an inpatient to an outpatient procedure, even back then, you know. So it was good.
So for generations listening to this years from now, is there any wisdom you would want to pass on to them?
Oh, that's a tough one. Yeah, I thought of that one. Yeah, I think the wisdom would be really to get involved in your organizations. You know, I'm really involved in the Canadian Orthopedic Association, really involved in the Orthopedic Trauma Association. So pick one or two or three that you really like and get really involved with them. Get to know the people there, get involved in the organization from the ground up and stick with it. I think you'll have friends for life, you know, and you have colleagues you can call your friends and you can call upon and talk about cases. And, you know, I phone up people all the time and chat about cases. I called up 4 guys the other day because I was doing a pelvis that at an open area, and I phoned up 4 friends and said, what would you do? And, you know, finally I did what I was gonna do, but I had really good feeling that I had good insight into it. So I think having good friends and good colleagues in these 2 or 3 organizations that you're gonna get really involved with is a good thing to do, right? At whatever level you think you can go at.
Great, well, thank you very much.